Jason.
Yes, my darling?
It's no good. We can't go on eating like this.
Out of the microwave and into your ears, this is ABC Epicurean Radio, and we'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Angela Weber, Adam Bowen, Lance Curtis, Jane Harders, Bill Conn, Peter Whitford, Jill McKay, and Peter Smalley. Special guests today, Vic Davies and Malcolm Lees, and the great David Morrow. Music by Arthur Greenslade's Simpering Strings, and Ronald Curtis with his mighty organ. Meanwhile, we're slightly out to lunch.
Help! Help!
Take that, foul dragon! Prepare to die, thou cowardly, loathsome, hellspawn, slimy beast of darkness.
I say, old chap, that's a bit much, isn't it?
Speak not, foul dragon from Satan's brood.
Actually, I'm High Church of England.
I'll have thy blood.
Your what? I read the lesson at St. Bruce's every Sunday.
You wouldn't think so, the way you've been carrying on.
Carrying on? I'll have you know my family's been abducting damsels in this county for centuries.
Oh, all right, all right. I'll be with you in a second. Couldn't you find something a little less antisocial to do?
Well, I tried joining the local hunt, but I couldn't get a big enough horse. Besides, with all that heavy breathing, I tend to scotch the dogs, you know.
Yes, yes. I imagine it puts them off the scent a bit.
My brother Gerald joined the army. He's commissioned in the Queen's Own Dragoons.
Oh, fine body of men. And, others.
Then Roger, my other brother, became Bishop of Durham, so I was left to manage the family estates. Don't get a top draw type of damsel anymore, I'm afraid.
I know. You should see some of the ones I've had to rescue lately. Not quite our sort of people.
Okay, Mush! Come and then I've a gremlin and quick smack! Get a bum bum over here or I'll report it!
Excuse me. Now, where were we?
Yeah, well, I was saying it's a quiet life here, but it does suit me. Oh. I do have my books. I read classics at Oxford, of course.
Oh, you were at Oxford. I thought I recognized you. We played in the first 15 together.
I say, it's Dasher Plantagenet, isn't it?
Yes.
You were a useful little winger, if I'm not mistaken, an old Eton boy like me.
No, actually, I went to Harrow.
Oh, dear. I was sure he was Eton.
Present great moments from the cutting room floor, lost excerpts from great movies, and today, an early scene from the children's classic, Hans Christian Andersen.
A little white duck sitting in the water, a little white duck doing what
Jimmy,
the water.
Hand me the 12 guides, huh?
Oh, fine. You got it. He flapped his wings.
No,
I'm
easy.
Glad I'm a little white duck.
I got him now.
Sitting in the water.
I couldn't move.
Quack,
yeah.
Quack, quack.
Oh, missed.
Tonight, enjoy a very special night's viewing on R28. At 7:30 in Rigliano's Believe It or Get Stuffed, Talking Corpse Jack Palanchi investigates eerie sightings of exploding Izzy dies in the Armenian desert. And in Grandovich's classic series, Obsessive Practice Tonight, Simonov confesses to indiscretions with Fatso the Wombat, so Vikinsky severs the relationship surgically. Then it's Tonight with Berto Nuticelli. Tonight, Berto talks to Beard with Legs, Darini Hinchliano, who walks out and nobody notices. Also in tonight's show, Pete Smith moves. Don't touch your dial. We'll rearrange yours. R28. A whole world of rubbish.
And now it's time for our weekly Pets Corner with our regular veterinary consultant, Bruce Lessis. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello, it's nice to be with you again, and as usual, I'm speaking to you from my busy surgery here at the clinic in Drainage Hills, and this week's letter comes from Miranda Gulp of Abscess Hills. Last time I was out that way, I had a frightful toothache, Miranda, so I don't have very happy memories, I'm afraid, dear. Anyhow, you write, "Dear Bruce, an echidna strayed into our back garden a few days ago, and I have made a pet of it. But I do not know what echidnas like to eat. Can you tell me a good diet for one, and is it safe to have one inside?" An echidna! Golly, it's not an animal that usually strays into an average suburban backyard, Miranda. I wonder how he got there. And you say you've made a pet of him, eh? I must confess, I find that a little hard to believe, dear, really. How do you manage to pick him up? Isn't he a bit prickly for you? You see, Miranda, I don't think the animal you've got there is an echidna at all. No, at an educated guess, I'd say what you've got is a baby gorilla that's escaped from the Moran Flats mini safari park, which isn't far away from you. He's a cuddly little fellow, isn't he? And really, he's a sort of substitute for your baby brother Conan, who ate all the blankets off his cot and had to be taken away. But as I'm sure you know, dear, the people at the safari park will be looking for their lost gorilla, and I think you know, too, that you're going to have to give him back. So I'm afraid there's no use pretending to me or to yourself that he's an echidna. Dear, oh dear, that was a bit silly, wasn't it, Miranda? But then again, I can understand why you did it. Your mother urged you to write to me, didn't she? Because she wanted to keep the baby gorilla too, didn't she? She hasn't been quite the same since Conan ate his blankets, has she? And nor has your poor dad. That's probably why he sits in the bath with all his clothes on and talks to himself. Am I right, Miranda? Yes, I am, aren't I, dear? So you just go and ring up the safari park now, will you? And save yourself a lot of trouble later on, eh? And while you're at it, you might as well ring the local hospital too and ask them to send someone out to help your father. They have men who can reason with him, and if that fails, they can give him a nice injection. Okay, Miranda, thanks for your letter, and now this is Bruce Loess's saying, things aren't always what they seem in the animal kingdom or the human one.
Who wants to be a millionaire? You do, and you can, with the Daily Murdoch Scratch It Lucky Game. Pick up your Daily Murdoch Scratch It Lucky card and scratch it to win a Rub for Gold coupon. There are thousands of Rub for Gold coupons to be won. Rub your Rub for Gold coupon, match the halves for your crack at Rip for Riches. With Rip for Riches tickets, it's easy to be a millionaire. Rip it open for your chance for the good life, match three tickets, and a Tear for Treasure envelope could be yours. Tear open your Tear for Treasure envelope, answer the three easy questions, and you could be another instant winner of a Cook for Cash application form where you could score an interview for a part-time job at McDonald's. Simply get accepted for the job, save your money, invest it in a surefire money-making venture, and you could be the next incredibly wealthy winner of the Daily Murdoch Scratch It Lucky Game. So get scratching!
Ah, you must be Mr. Blenkinsop from the taxation office.
No, I'm Frank Dawkins. I'm filling in for Mr. Blenkinsop. Now, you know why I'm here. It's about your company tax return for the last financial year when you claim total tax exemption on the grounds that this is a religious foundation.
Yeah, well, this is it.
This is a coin laundrette, Mr. Pearson?
It might appear that way to an unbeliever.
Mr. Pearson, it's got rows and rows of twin tubs.
You mean our dual baptismal fonts?
They've got whirlpool stamped on them.
Mock not the sacred sign of the whirlpool. The spiritual eddy from what we were all chucked out of.
Bloody hell, it's washer's jam.
There, I heard that woman say washer.
I think not. This is Sister Madge, my wife. Bid hello unto the tax man, Sister Madge.
Oh. Hello, my son.
What were you saying about a washer being jammed?
Merely that one of our flock has been putting brass washers in the collection boxes.
I think this has gone far enough. You're both clearly guilty of tax fraud.
Don't be silly. God doesn't pay tax, does he? Which is just as well, I might add. since we are all children in the eyes of the Lord, and it would stuff the tax department up no end if he claimed for every one of us.
Yea, verily, Brother Duane.
Yea.
Mr. Pearson, do you have any evidence at all that this coin laundrette is a religious organization? Any ceremonies, any rites?
Like sacrifice?
Well, that'd be a start.
Well, Mr. Dawkins, I wonder if you'd mind lying on this ironing board, altar.
Certainly not. I demand to see your books.
The sacred writings are kept in here.
In a tumble dryer?
A fiery tabernacle to remind sinners of hellfire.
I must see the books, Mr. Pearson.
So be it. In you go. Mind where you tread. Sacred vestments are there. Shirts, bras, Sister Madge's iron-on icons.
Can't see any books here.
I'll tell you the tale of an Irish Colleen who came to Australia when she was 16. By rubbing and scrubbing she kept her clothes clean, but how she longed for a washing machine. 'Twas at the front bar of a pub in Ayers Rock, a devious young scoundrel poured beer on her frock. He said, "Don't you worry, I'll get that dress clean, 'cause I have my very own washing machine." "Come back to my laundrette," he said with a leer, "your frocks will be spotless, there's nothing to fear." And as he was handsome, so dark, tall and lean, she fell for the lure of his washing machine. 'Twas just about midnight he unlocked the shop. He filled her with gin, she was ready to drop. Who knows what her fate might have otherwise been if she'd seen the light.
Not his washing machine.
"Remove all your garments, there's no one about. I'll freshen your drink, being the scheming young lout."
She was dimly aware I was not as it seemed,
but still was entranced by his washing machine.
She coyly slipped out of her things one by one.
The villain leapt up and said, "Let's have some fun, darling." No means of escape was around to be seen. With a scream, she plunged into the washing machine.
When the wash cycle finished, the poor girl, she'd gone, vanished without trace.
Yes, all that was left, was a scrap, just a scrap of French lace.
So all you young maidens, be sure to dry clean, or your fate could be sealed
in a washing machine. But fate said, poor Colleen, she turned up once more from a harborside drain on the Fremantle shore.
A bold sewage worker saved her, married her, and fulfilled her fondest dream
by personally plumbing her own washing machine.
How much do you really know about your children?
Our John has lost a lot of weight and is looking very pale and locks himself in his room all day. I don't know what he does.
Yeah, Judy used to be such a popular girl, you know, but now she doesn't see any of her old friends, and we've just found out she hasn't been to church fellowship for months.
I know there's something wrong with John, but he won't talk to me, and most nights he doesn't come home till dawn.
Could your child be a vampire?
No, that couldn't happen here.
Wrong. This quiet Australian suburb may not look like the Carpathian Mountains in Transylvania, but lurking beneath the surface is the growing problem of vampirism.
Oh, my John would never get involved in that sort of thing.
Are you sure? Young Gary was a popular boy, good at cricket and football, and a promising student. He planned to go on to university and do dentistry, but look at him now.
At a local pub listening to a rock band when a friend offered me a bite of a neck that was going around. Everybody else was getting undead and I didn't want to be left out. It was unreal.
A story that is more common than we'd like to believe.
But how can I tell if my child is a vampire?
There are many myths about vampires, but watch for the following signs. Pale complexion, large teeth, odd sleeping habits, avoidance of ethnic food, speaking in an East European accent, and growing resemblance to a bat. But help is just a phone call away. Just ring VampAid any time before sunset, and we'll send around one of our specially trained counselors. Remember, vampirism can be cured.
And welcome to Curio Talkback, a phone-in about any antiques, valuables, or curios that you'd like to have identified and valued. And here to help us is our resident expert, Arthur Wingage. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
And we'll go straight to our first caller now. Hello, you're on the air.
I've got a fragment of pottery here which I think might be antique. It features a rather basic geometric design with some rudimentary figures against an orange background.
Yes, that'd be a fragment of a Mycenaean amphora jug, dating back to about the 13th century BC. It's a very rare artefact from a civilization which ended abruptly about 3,000 years ago, and consequently very valuable. Of course, if you had the whole jug, it'd be worth a fortune.
Thanks for your call. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I've got this rather big metal object here, about 50 feet long,
yes.
Bullet-shaped, tail fins, and the markings USAS.
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas what it is?
Yes, that sounds to me like a tactical nuclear missile, probably an American cruise or even an MX. Was it buried in a huge concrete silo?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, then it's definitely an MX missile. You're quite lucky, as these are very valuable, and you should get a good price from the Soviet.
Hello, you're talking to Arthur Wingage.
Yes, I was just listening to the last caller, and I think I've got something similar.
Oh, really, an MX missile?
Well, more a fragment, actually.
A fragment of an MX missile?
Yes, it was all that was left after the explosion.
Oh, now, was this a very big explosion with a mushroom-shaped cloud, a widespread...
knocked over my Welsh dresser.
Oh, well, in that case, it's a used nuclear missile, and consequently isn't worth much at all. But if I were you, I'd hang on to that crockery, as it'll be worth a fortune by the time they dig us all out.
From across the seas, around the globe, out of the outback and into your local theatre, it's the Cooey Newsreel. The South Pacific, and on historic Cabbage Island, the nut brown natives prepare for the annual snail hunt. Dressed in traditional garb of turtle shells and baseball caps left behind by the Americans, the islanders drink maki, a strong local beer, and brandish huge clubs made from the timbers of the many wrecks along their coastline. Advancing through the mangroves, they herd thousands of imaginary gastropods into groups, then, with blood-curdling shrieks, bash the living daylights out of them. Snails have been extinct on the island for almost 2 centuries, but the annual hunt is still carried on with great enthusiasm. Whack, whack! And there'll be plenty of sore heads tomorrow. The annual snail hunt on beautiful Cabbage Island. Chile, and a little-known industry in sunny Santiago. It's called leg knotting. In the picturesque stadium of the Immaculate Truth, leg knotters carry out their tasks with muscular skill, accompanied by the poignant guitar of local musical hero Manitas de Cartilage. Chief leg knotter Colonel Jose de Psycho grins for the Cooey camera as he knots his 8th leg for the morning. Enthusiastic cries echo across the stadium. Leg knotting, a quaint but colorful industry in sunny Santiago. On a sadder note, we go to Mount Hinds in the far north, where the Cooey Newsreel team cover the tragic death of well-known cliff cyclist Roger Helmet. Roger was attempting to cycle down the 1,000-foot vertical cliff face of Hinds Pass when he lost control and plunged to the bottom. The remains of his bicycle with its special glue-coated wheels can be seen scattered on the rocks far below. Sergeant Ray Heavy of the police search and rescue squad said, "He was a very brave man, and he only suffered until he hit the ground." Australia says farewell to one of her finest sporting sons. Los Angeles and Tinseltown celebrities gather at the Ronald Reagan Temple of the Arts for the premiere of Australia's latest award-winning blockbuster, The Creature from Perth, directed by Max Ego and featuring shy new Aussie megastar Bricky Veneer. Cooey cameras are on the spot to capture all the excitement for the folks back home. Limousines glide to a halt as flashbulbs pop. Look, there's fabulous Jackie Cellulite wearing trendy Vegemite earrings. And with her is another brilliant thespian, Australian character actor Broderick Paunch. Whoops, Broderick staggers, but lovely Jackie helps him with his glass. And he recovers. The movie world salutes another Australian triumph in glamorous Los Angeles. The Cooey Newsreel, across the globe, out of the outback, and into your theatre.
Oh, I'm so tense, and I've got such a headache. I'm going to lie down and take sex.
Yes, for all headaches, pain, and marital upsets, use sex. Take it after meals and last thing at night. S-E-X. Sex is better.
And now for viewers right across Australia, Channel 14 and the Acme Suspender Belt Company proudly present the Terry Legarn Melody Hour. And here's your host, Terry Legarn.
Thank you, thank you. Lovely people. I love you all.
Okay, Q dancers go on camera 3 right into his face. And Q Terry.
We skip the light fandango.
Okay, hold it, studio. Terry, yes? The word is fandango. Fandango, not fandango.
Fandango. Fandango. Oh, oh, fandango. Right, right, Damien. Got it.
It's okay, Terry. Fandango. Okay, fandango. Everybody, first positions again from the top.
We skip the light fandango. Turn cartwheels, cross the floor.
Okay, Terry, you're going off mic.
Well, I can hardly do a cartwheel standing still, can I now?
Terry, you don't do the cartwheel. Oh, the dancers do the cartwheel. That's why this is costing the network $500,000.
I don't do the cartwheel.
Oh.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry.
Okay, pick it up.
Sorry. We skip the light fandango.
Great. Camera 2, pan with the dancers.
Turn cartwheels, cross the floor. I was feeling kind of seasick.
Sensational. What an ad-lib. Oh, stay with that. Camera 1, terrific television. Keep that in, Terry. That was great. Terry? Terry? Oh, my God. What? It must have been the oysters.
Good afternoon, this is David Morrow and welcome to Sports Extra, our first edition for 1492. And I'm talking today with Italy's favourite son, Christopher Columbus. Well, Chris, how does it feel to have discovered America?
Well, Dave, it's really great, you know. I just went out there to do my best, you know, and I had a good discovery left in me and so, you know, I'm very happy.
Or was there any moment out there when you thought you mightn't make it?
Well, you know, people have been telling me the world was flat and I must admit, when we got near the Spanish Main, I was wondering if we were going to fall off the edge. But I just hung in there and, you know, it happened for me.
Well, you must have been very happy with the way the crew went out there.
Well, they gave it everything, Dave. The boys have been turning in some good performances and training on the Bay of Biscay, so I was confident they'd do well.
Well, now, I believe you used a rather new, radical design for the boat.
Yes, Dave. We put a wooden keel on the bottom. It's a bit of a breakthrough in this class of boat. We used to stabilise the ship by throwing French prisoners of war over the side during rough weather. But with the new keel, we find the boat's much more stable.
Well, Chris, were you expecting to discover America this time out?
Well, no, Dave. I was hoping to get India. But, you know, I feel I've done my best, so I'm very happy with that. And, you know, it's a whole new world out there.
Well, what about the future, Chris? We've even heard rumours that you might even be going commercial next year.
Yes, well, after this, I might just think about that, Dave. The King of Spain has asked me to go to South America for him and try and pick up some gold medals and whatever else I can rip off the Aztecs, and I must admit, it does look very attractive at this stage.
Well, Chris, all of Italy must be very proud of you.
Thanks, Dave. I'd just like to say hello to my mum, Maria, over there in Genoa, and all the family in Milan, and, of course, my coach, Veal Saldenbocker. Hi, Veal.
Thanks, Chris. Now back to the studio. And on Sports Extra next week, we preview the Spanish Armada. And we'll be asking the question, just how good is Francis Drake? And with that, we leave you with the news here from Lisbon that in 1492, Columbus has sailed the ocean blue.
Hello? Oh, hi, Sally. Yeah, I've just finished knitting a new husband, and I was just walking...
You may find this hard to believe.
Oh, my goodness, the chips!
But your insurance does not cover the chips.
Hello, I'm Gillian Cross, the least known of the amazing Willacy brothers. And today I'll be looking at the phenomenon known as heterosexuality, the attraction which crosses sexual boundaries, that condition where men and women look outside their own genders for sexual partners. Men in love with women. Women in love with men. Where will it all end? And more importantly, where does it all begin?
It began for me about the age of 11 or 12 when the dreams started.
The dreams?
Yes, strange, confusing dreams about railway tunnels and Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews?
Yeah.
So, what did you do?
I bought a season ticket to Mary Poppins and it was in that darkened theatre as I watched Julie Andrews slide up the banister for the 47th time that I realised I was a heterosexual.
And so begins the long, slow descent into the shadowy world of heterosexuality. A bizarre world where women dress up in ladies' clothing and men are said to drink each other under the tables. But perhaps the chief peculiarity of heterosexuals is the way in which they tend to congregate in certain occupations, such as forestry, roof tiling, hotel mineral management, anything to do with bicycles and medicine, although university research has proved that most bank managers are, of course, gay. What causes this group dynamic, this ghettoization of heterosexuals? I asked Dr. Hugo Stoat Uttering, Associate Professor of Other People's Business at Macquarie University.
I don't know.
But these, of course, are peripheral issues. The burning issue. The question on everybody's lips is, what exactly do heterosexuals do? Mr. Ralph Swope.
You mean in bed, after lights out?
Yes, in those intimate moments, do you sort of turn each other on?
No. We usually turn Bert Newton on, only for a few minutes, but we find it helps us sleep.
Right. Isn't heterosexuality really a promiscuous lifestyle?
Eh?
Isn't it a sort of lifelong orgy of unbridled lust, a complete surrender to craven desires, and an endless round of parties with anonymous and frequently drugged sex partners?
Not lately, no.
No, not since we gave up bowling.
We've been slightly out to lunch with a script by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Colin Bowles, Peter Smalley, Lance Curtis, Adam Byrne, Warwick Maber, David Witt, George Faithful, Ken Johnson, Steve Matthews, Doug McLeod, Vic Davies, and Malcolm Leeds. The Cooey consultant was Robert Parker, production assistant Linda Hughes, script editor Julianne Ford, sound effects by John Farkas, technical production by Warwick Maber, and the program was produced by Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin.
Darling.
Huh?
Wake up, darling. I've got to go.
Mm.
Do you realize the next time we sleep together, we'll be married?
Yeah.
Oh, it won't be the same somehow. There was something about not being married that made it, well, exciting. Mm. I wonder if we're doing the right thing. I mean, getting married.
Our families expect it, darling.
I know, but it won't be the same somehow.
It's too late to change our minds now, darling.
Yes, I know, but Jason...
Yes, Marissa?
I wish we'd decided to marry each other.